Welcome to Straightforward, the engaging audio series of North Group Consultants designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest Scott Heinzelman, partner of McConley & Asbury Accounting Firm and the author of the Exuberant Accountant blog. Roger and Scott will be discussing Scott's leadership journey. Now, from North Group Consultants, here's Roger North.
I was in a conversation, actually in a sales meeting with a client about a week ago, and we were having a conversation about whether it is easier to have friends become clients or to have clients become friends. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that. I've had the privilege of having things go both ways, and they each have their challenges to balance the friendship and the need to service clients well out. But it's been a privilege of mine, I think, perhaps maybe the seminal privilege of being in business, that for me, the journey of being a business person has also been a journey of collecting friends. And in many ways, I think the business of business development, that is developing our businesses and offering its services to other people, is a process of collecting friendships and being of service to people. And over the last year and a half, I've had the privilege of forging a friendship with an incredible guy who's become a good friend of mine, Scott Heinzelman, who is a CPA and partner with McConley & Asbury in Harrisburg. And it's just a privilege to have you join me on Straightforward today. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Roger. My privilege to be here.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about a couple of different topics today. I have found Scott to be one of the most service-oriented and effective business development professionals that I've ever met. So that's a topic that we're going to get into here today. And we're also going to talk a little bit about a wonderful blog that Scott has called The Exuberant Accountant, which is tremendously successful for Scott in terms of making new friends around the world, being of service to people, and, oh, by the way, building his business along the way. But before we get into that, Scott, just like to hear a little bit about your background. One of the great commonalities we have is we both went to that wonderful institution of higher learning in the Harrisburg area, Messiah College, and we connected over that, I think, at our first meeting probably 2 years ago. But tell us a little bit about your growing up years and how you got to Messiah and how you chose the accounting profession.
Well, thank you, Roger. Those are good questions. You know, I grew up in a little town called Middleburg in Snyder County. And much like Lancaster County, it's an agriculture-based community. A lot of loyalty to that area. People are tight-knit family groups there. I learned how to eat pork and sauerkraut and hog maw and things like that.
Hog maw. Now, wait a second. I don't know that one. What's hog maw?
Pig stomachs. So, okay. You've never had hog maw and you live in Lancaster County?
I have had pig stomach. I did not know it by its alternate name, hog maw.
So I feel like I grew up with some conservative roots.
Sure. And
it's funny how I got into accounting. As long as I can remember, I've always enjoyed money and I know and
learn to the club.
That's right. And learning about money and understanding the dynamics of it. So many people don't understand money. And I just had a propensity to want to learn more about it, and it really propelled me into a career in accounting. Mm-hmm. I've learned a long time ago that the language of business is accounting, and
absolutely,
I wanted to understand that, and I really enjoy that, and I enjoy helping people understand it as well. How I got to Messiah is a good story. My passion in life a long time ago was basketball, mm-hmm, and I've always wanted to play basketball collegiately, and so that was my passion, was to get to Messiah and play. And it's funny how our dreams take a turn, and God has a different plan. I only played 1 year there. I found it very difficult to keep my grades up, continue to have a relationship with my girlfriend at the time, and play basketball. It wasn't all working very well, and so I had to come to Jesus meeting with my father and start to focus more on the things that were important and less on basketball.
So basketball was the casualty of that conversation.
That
huh?
is exactly right. But I did get a good education, and I married my girlfriend. So we married 21 years. It was a good, successful transition.
Congratulations.
So, thank you, Roger.
And your children?
Yes, I have three children, 16, 11, and 9, and I'm trying to steer them all towards Messiah College, but I have to be careful because I do have one child that's pretty strong-willed, and I'm sure if I push, she'll go the other direction.
Well, as you know, I have three as well, and I'm 0-for-2 in steering them to Messiah, 2-for-2 in paying their tuition. So I'm not sure what the connection is there, but they're getting a good education anyhow.
As you know, Roger, I sit on the board of trustees for Messiah,
right?
And I'm sure that some of my children might not like that, having their father being a board member of the school that they attend. So we'll see how that all plays out in the years to come, but it's a good school for sure.
Did you come right out of college and join McConley and Asbury, and what was that process like?
I did, Roger. I interned at McConley and Asbury when I was in my senior year, really had a great feel for the firm, and accepted a job here that I started July 1st of 1989.
Okay.
And have been there 21 years and thoroughly enjoy it. It's a great firm. It's changed a lot. And while I'm based in Harrisburg, I spend a lot of time in Lancaster. We have a large office here.
Yes.
And also in Allentown, and the firm has grown quite a bit. We like to say that we're the largest accounting firm headquartered in central Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. Give me a sense of that growth that has occurred over the course of 21 years, Scott. Do you kind of remember the size you were at in 89 relative to where you folks are now?
Sure. It was probably around 15 or so professionals when I joined the firm.
Wow.
I'm not sure exactly how many we have. We have about 110 total employees in all of our combined entities that we own. So it's grown very nicely, and very little acquisition growth. That's mainly been through organic growth. We think that's a good way to grow.
Absolutely.
And it's been very successful for us. And it's a lot of fun. As you probably know, I've touted this statistic a lot. 6 of the last 7 years, we've been listed as one of the best places to work in the state of Pennsylvania, which is kind of unusual for an accounting firm. It's a tough profession. It has a history of burning out people, and they call it the churn and burn of public accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've worked hard to engage our workforce, to keep our employees excited and wanting to come to work, because that's the front lines of customer service. And as a partner, yes, we have impact with our clients, and hopefully we're adding a lot of value, but it's our people that really are touching them day to day and in a big way. And so we want to have engaged employees that are out there loving our customers, because that makes happy customers, and happy customers make for growth and good things. That's our business model.
And you and I were talking earlier about really the key to that is not only engaged employees, but a recruiting plan that you're inviting employees into the firm who start with some of the characteristics that are already valued as a part of the culture at the firm. And I think your firm has done a particularly good job at recognizing that, having a recruiting process that matches that and gives people an opportunity to join you if they really feel like there's a match there. And I found it interesting that even 21 years ago, there was an internship opportunity that engaged you.
Mm-hmm.
And your firm has been really successful, I think, with a very assertive, I'm going to say, recruiting process, which involves a couple of different types of internships. And I am familiar with this now because one of my client's fourth generation young men is interning with you. And I just saw him last week, and he was full of vim and vigor about his experience with McConley and Asbury. So I think it would be terrific if you just explain a little bit how that has helped the firm and helped the employees as they come in.
That's good, Roger. Thank you. Yes, we have internships, but we also do an externship program.
Right.
We often bring in sophomores in college and some juniors and really give them a chance to do some job shadowing, get a chance to be mentored by a first or second year staff accountant in our firm. And it really is our way of giving back and helping them understand what really accounting is, because they learn a lot of theory in college, but then to see it in practice is very different. It also then gives us a chance to learn about these young people, and if the right ones, while they're all talented and on paper look awesome, we want to find people that have a servant's heart, that really understand what we're about, and that is about serving others. And so we recruit and look for people that really have that bent, those that play well together in a team and mm-hmm. that will sacrifice self for the whole. And those characteristics are what make a great service provider, whether you're in the ministry, whether you're in accounting or law or whatever business you're in. That's important. And we look for that. We recruit it. We try to breed that culture internally. And it's been successful. We're not going to change our formula.
Doesn't sound like you should. And in terms of the number of interns that you bring in, on an annual basis or maybe an average basis, how many of them end up being permanent employees of the firm?
Of the interns, maybe half of those probably turn into full-time staff. Of the externs, we might only take 3 or 4
sure.
of our 25 mm-hmm. externs that we'll run through the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The internship is the more intense experience
yes.
of the two. One may lead to another, which may in
Correct.
Turn lead to employment.
Right. The externship is not paid. The internship is paid and more of a full-time summer type of role or a part-time during our traditional busy season time, where we bring more tax interns in during our tax season, if you will.
Sure. And while we're rounding out our understanding of your firm, Scott, what would you say is the major value proposition of McConley and Asbury? Because obviously there's a lot of public mm-hmm. accounting firms around, many of them very, very good, many of them friends of yours and friends of mine, but there's differentiation that takes place there. What would you say is the value proposition of your firm and maybe an ideal client profile?
Good question. You know, there's a lot of great accountants out there. And what I like to tell people is I don't know that any firm has assembled as many great accountants with great technical skills and great soft skills and have a passion for what they do. And I think that passionate behavior, that passionate enthusiasm to serve is really what separates us. Yes, there's many of those type of people out there, but I don't know there's a collection of them in one firm, in one organization that kind of is rowing the boat the same direction. And so I think if I'm out there on the front lines talking to prospects and clients, but then behind the scenes, our team isn't delivering with responsiveness and great customer service, it's all for naught. Yep. So we have a great organization where people are really rowing the boat the same direction, and we all have a common belief and desire to serve at a high level and a passion for what we're doing. And I do believe that separates us as an organization. I would say that's the difference.
And that's a culture that you've intentionally built, that you're recruiting for, and mm-hmm. that you're marketing out to
Correct.
People that would desire to be served in that way. And an ideal client profile for you, Scott?
Central Pennsylvania is made up with a lot of privately held, family-owned companies. That's a good niche for us, whether it's in a manufacturing, construction. Certainly, we serve a lot of different industries, and we have some unique skill sets and specialties in those areas. But privately held companies would certainly be one. We do a lot of internal audit work and risk-based auditing, things that might be similar to Sarbanes-Oxley mm-hmm. or bank internal audit work. We have a large group in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Also do a lot of affordable housing real estate work,
okay.
Which is kind of a unique niche. There aren't many firms that do that stuff. So
yeah.
Those would be kind of the key areas, I would say.
Wonderful. Thank you. I remember about 2 years ago, I was having breakfast with a friend of mine. His name is Barry Kane. He's a terrific guy, and he's a terrific sales consultant. He and I do quite a bit of work together and have developed a great friendship. But I don't remember how the conversation got to this point, but it's a fairly typical conversation that I'm privileged to have. And he said to me, "Now, you must know the exuberant accountant Scott Heintzelman." And I said, "Well, I know a Scott Heintzelman that has done a lot of service at my alma mater, Messiah College, and I believe he's a trustee, and he's been honored there for his service to the college. Are we talking about the same guy?" He said, "Oh, absolutely, we're talking about the same guy. Surely you know him." I said, "Well, actually, I've never shaken his hand." And he said, "Well, you need to do so." So we proceeded from there and had an opportunity to get together, and I subscribed to your blog. And since then, we just, I think, had a lot of great contact and a lot of conversation, and I've just been fascinated with the way that you go about collecting friends for yourself and for your business. And we both know that when we do that in a genuine way, when we do that in a service-oriented way, we're not looking for a quid pro quo. We're not looking for reciprocity. We are hoping that that kind of behavior on our part, genuine, service-oriented, helpful, will eventually result in some good things for the firms we represent. And that's the way that I've tried to go about building my business, and I know it's the way that you've gone about building yours. And I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about what I'm thinking was probably an evolution for you, starting out as a young CPA and then realizing that you had some passion for doing some external work, some business development, to the point now where you spend a fair amount of your time in external activities, developing value and friendships for your firm. How did that evolve for you? And was there a point when you realized, yeah, this is a place where I'd really like to spend a lot of my time?
Well, first off, Barry Kane is a wonderful man, and I'm appreciative of him introducing us. I do have a lot of respect for Barry. I sit on Pinnacle Health's foundation board with Barry, and there are a few men I have more respect for than him.
I agree.
As far as how it evolved, you know, it's funny. When you join an accounting firm, you think about debits and credits and tax code.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that there were very few people in accounting, in our firm in particular, that other than the partners were front-facing and good communicators and liked to spend time with clients. They really liked to be with the work papers and understanding the numbers. And I kind of liked that as well, but I saw that to become a partner, you had to be more than that. Beyond hard skills, you needed great soft skills. And so early on, I had some good mentoring by Clarence Asbury, one of the founders of the firm who's since retired, and Terry Harris, who is our current managing partner. And they really fostered and developed in me a desire to try to bring out the leadership qualities that I thought were inside of me and some of the soft skills. And it started to evolve, and I enjoyed it. I like communicating to clients and prospects and doing speaking engagements. I do probably 20 to 30 speaking engagements a year.
Wow. A lot of time and energy for that, isn't there, Scott?
There is. But it's been very rewarding. You have to know your material when you stand up in front of an audience and speak.
Absolutely.
The blog sort of evolved from some things that I was doing internally. I have always loved to read. I love to read good leadership and management books. Mm-hmm. And when I would read a good book, I wanted to share it. So I would take notes, type them up, and I was sending them out internally inside of our firm. And they were very well received by a lot of different people. And so I started sending them to a few clients.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, I would send articles that I would read to clients and maybe put a little my own commentary on it, how I thought it might impact them. Then along came blogging in the political world, and the software became very user-friendly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly it clicked for me that, wow, I should be memorializing this content, if you will, and putting it in a place that I could archive it and send it out later or make it easily accessible to other people. Hence, the Exuberant Accountant domain was formed and the blog started. And
how in the world did you come up with that name?
Well, it's funny because
that's great.
It's who I am. People often, when they get to know me, they'll go, are you really an accountant? And I'm like, yes, I am a CPA. And in fact, I passed the exam the first time I took it.
You do break down some of the stereotypes,
right,
Scott. I've got to tell you that much.
So they always joke, how can you tell an extroverted accountant from an introverted accountant? When, of course, the extroverted accountant will look at your shoes when he's staring. It kind of just grew on me, this name, and we bounced it around a little. And I wanted to let people know that I'm still an accountant mm-hmm. while I am exuberant.
Mm-hmm.
So in July of 2008, I launched the blog and really just had a desire to reach a few different people, a couple clients, a few people in my network. I serve on a bank board. I thought those people might see some value in what I'm doing, my book notes. Early on, I decided to profile some servant leaders that I respected and mm-hmm. some organizations that I thought really got it
mm-hmm.
in terms of employee engagement and how they had a long-term view towards success. Never in my wildest dreams did I think my blog would go to where it has now. And in the accounting profession, they refer to me as a pioneer.
Mm.
And for a guy that's about to turn 44, I think I'm too young to be called a pioneer. But
well, you are losing some of your hair, so I think that's all right.
So there's some gray there as well. And it's taken off. My subscribers are, as we mentioned earlier, from all over the world. I don't know why they see value in that. I'm honored and humbled by that. But largely, I write to a central Pennsylvania audience.
Yes.
But it has quite a big footprint. Two other service providers have picked up my blog and I post my content there that are more nationwide. But largely it's the domain, theexuberantaccountant.com, that I write for. And it's free. I don't charge anything. I'm not selling anything there. My passion is really just to educate. And as we've talked about, it fits the culture of who we are and who I am as a person. So many times the word sell has a negative connotation mm-hmm. in our society, and we think of the glad-handing networking jerk that's always trying to take mm-hmm. in a win-lose type of transaction. I don't believe that at all. The word sell comes from the old English word sellain, S-E-L-L-A-N. I may have not pronounced it right, which means to give or to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And a true salesperson is somebody that's giving empathy, counsel, attention. They're giving time. They're giving an education. And I've always saw myself as that person. And what I'm trying to do is build a relationship with people that's long-term and not a one-time transaction. And so if I'm called a salesman and that's the definition people use, well, then I'm guilty as charged.
Scott, that's such a great explanation and resonates very much with me. I think the thing that sometimes people overlook is when you get into a position like you're in, and hopefully I'm moving toward, well, people see you as someone that wants to be genuinely helpful, that maybe has access to some resources that could be helpful mm-hmm. to them. It's a great place to be, but it's also very, very time and energy consuming. And two of the things really that I've been impressed about in my relationship with you is how quickly you get back to people, me in particular, and I'm assuming that I'm not an exception to that. And secondly, in the world of business blogging, you blog often. I don't know what the statistics are, but I think I get a blog from you probably an average of 2 times a week. And I look forward to it, and I always read them, and I always find them informative. But whenever I read them, I think, how does that Heintzelman find the time and energy to do it that often and then deal with the communication that probably comes as a result? Because I would say, oh, I don't know what the number is, but maybe 1 out of every dozen, I find it interesting or compelling enough that I send a little email back to you just thanking you for that or agreeing with some part of the content or connecting over some person that we both know. And I get some sort of acknowledgement or response from you very quickly. So it's got to be very time consuming. How do you manage that all together into your professional responsibilities? And has the blog itself added to the overall volume?
My partners would joke that I have no professional responsibilities. And if they listen to this, I'm sure they'll be laughing now. But
let's hope so.
Sure. No, I have a lot of client responsibilities. I'm not actually doing the tax returns or doing the audited work papers, but I have a lot of high-level client meetings and have responsibilities there. But largely, my firm has freed up my schedule to spend a good chunk of my time with this front-facing relationship-building role that I have. And I really enjoy it. I love being an advisor. And so it is part of who I am. It's mm-hmm. part of my DNA. Mm-hmm. My alarm goes off at 4 a.m. every morning.
That's early.
So my wife says that too. So
you still milk 100 head, right?
That's right. Both of my parents grew up on a farm, so I'm sure some of that work ethic I've inherited through their leadership. So I'm at the office at 4:30, a typical morning, and then that's where I do my devotions in the morning, and I do some emails and clean up things before the day starts. And then I'm off to the gym at 5:30 and try to be back at the office or my first meeting by 7:30 or so. Mm-hmm. And that's been my routine for a long time. And while my days do tend to be long, I enjoy what I do. I'm pretty disciplined in my eating habits and my sleep, so I think that gives me more energy.
Yes.
And I tend to maybe get 6 hours of sleep a night. That seems to work for me. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't always work for everybody else, mm-hmm. but I believe it's eating right, and I have a great passion for what I do, so I enjoy it, and I really enjoy helping people. It's remarkable. My wife jokes about how many thank you notes I get in a week at the office or at home of people that somehow they feel like I've impacted them in a positive way, and that means a lot to me. And as we've talked about before, I don't do that with the expectation of a quid pro quo type of relationship where they're going to return the favor. Many times they can't. But I believe in this idea of paying it forward. And it has, in my 21-year career, I've been blessed so many times because I've given, I've received. And there's a wonderful book called The Go-Giver, and I highly encourage it for anyone to read, written by two gentlemen, one guy by the name of Bob Berg. And they've done a great job of educating people on the benefits of giving. And you have to really give to receive in life. One of my favorite Bible verses is Malachi 3:10. Probably very few people quote Malachi 3:10. But I teach a stewardship class at my church, and I'm a big believer in what that says. And it really talks about where God really kind of challenges us. He says to bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. And he gives reasons why that is, because the church wants to pass that out and help those in need and that there may be food enough in the storehouse. But then the next part of the verse that I think is really imperative is he really kind of throws a dare down or a challenge and says, test me in this and see if I won't open up the heavens and pour out such a blessing you do not have room enough to store it.
Mm.
And I don't believe that God is telling us that we give to get.
No.
But there is certainly an expectation that if we're giving for the right reasons, there'll be many blessings that are added onto us. This isn't a message of prosperity, and I don't believe that's what he's saying, but I believe that there'll come many things that we can't even measure or contain.
Nor should we try to.
Right, and I really believe that's the business model I've tried to take, and I believe that that's what I'm trying to do with my definition of sales, is to try to help people, try to be a positive influence in their life, leave them with something more than what they came with when they met me. Hopefully, that results in new opportunities for our firm and new relationships that ultimately turn into clients. That's how we get paid. And my business partners would appreciate that that happens.
Sure.
And over 21 years, it's happened a lot, and it's happening even in a much faster pace right now. I've been really blessed, and I'm fortunate for that, and I'm real thankful. So I'm not going to change my formula. I'm at a good spot in life, and I'm real appreciative of that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I picked up there is what comes to you personally, what comes back to you, for instance, the number of thank you notes that you get, which I'm sure is enjoyable mm-hmm. and rewarding, and the business that eventually comes to your firm as a result, has to be treated as a byproduct, and in some cases, even an unexpected byproduct, mm-hmm. because I'm doing what I'm doing because I feel that I'm, can I say, called to do it?
Sure.
I feel that
sure.
I was wired to do it. And if the result of that is something returning to the storehouse, as you said, which it inevitably is, Scott,
correct.
Then I count that as a blessing, but certainly not as an entitlement. And I think that kind of mentality is something that is important for people to understand, particularly as they undertake opportunities in business to maybe develop a service or business development culture. You and I were talking earlier that it's really inconsistent to have a desire on a part of your firm to grow if you haven't already put in place a culture of helpfulness and service, because mm-hmm. eventually that's going to lead you to having a bifurcated brand or two brands, one in which externally people say, oh, that seems like they would be a really good firm to do business with. But then when they come inside and actually get served by you, they're disappointed because the people that serve you are not responsive, not helpful, not giving in the way that the people are externally. And so I think the real work of understanding your culture, hiring engaged employees, treating them well so that they continue to be engaged and helpful and curious about their clients is imperative to then developing in turn an external sales focus so that when some folks respond to that sales focus by becoming clients of our firm, they get an even better service experience than they had in the sales process. And so many times I'm disappointed when I move from the salesperson to the service person because it's not a consistent experience. And I think that's something that you really work hard to build at your firm, and I hope that we've done the same at North Group, because it just seems imperative to me that we not do a bait and switch.
Absolutely. And you have to have a consistent brand, and the people that actually do a lot of the work, they have to deliver. And I've been blessed that I have phenomenal segment leads that really lead our team and deliver what I say that we're going to do. Over and over again, when we pick up a new customer, and I ask this question, I go back because I want to make sure that I've never done any kind of bait and switch, and I'll say, everything I've told you, has it come true?
Right.
And I've had people say to me over and over again, we should have switched sooner. And
mm-hmm.
yes, Scott, your guys were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They under-promised and over-delivered. I take a lot of pride in that. And without those guys back there, I couldn't do anything that I do. I'm worthless without having the team behind me, and I'm blessed to have wonderful talent behind me.
And Scott, in contrast to that, you and I were also talking about this earlier before we started talking here on the recording, about how many people pursue a business development emphasis through sales techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And while I find training on, as you put it before, the soft skills, manners, courteousness, and perhaps even some understanding of the sales cycle and how to handle different points in the sales cycle to be valuable, I also find it to be dangerous if not put in the hands of people and a firm that are really committed to helpfulness and service. And too many times I feel like people try to find their sales growth from simply implementing sales techniques. And if we're not careful, they can quickly move to manipulation rather than helpfulness. Have you seen any of that out there?
Absolutely. I've been hired to do some rainmaker training for some different professional service organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tendency people want to know about quick results, and
yep.
they want to have closed techniques. And
yep.
let's get this in for the next quarter. That's not who I am, and that's not how I teach. I believe it's a long-term relationship. The mindset I want to get instilled is that we want to sell you for a lifetime. It's a relationship, not a transaction. And if all I care about is hitting my numbers and I'm trying to close and hit a quarterly report that I'm expected to reach so much revenue growth, then all I care about is a transaction. And I may manipulate you or overpromise and underdeliver with the expectation that I'm getting what I want. But that's a very short-sighted role. Like I said, our firm's been around a long time. I would be very narrow-sighted to do that. And what I want to do is have a long-term relationship with people and try to get to this mindset where it's selling you for a lifetime and educating you and adding value for a lifetime. And so if I do that, our firm will be very successful. And it's been the mindset that we have at the top of our organization. We try to permeate that throughout the whole organization. And when I do my Rainmaker training internally and externally, that's how I teach it. The currency of networking, and people tell me that, Scott, you're the best networked person I've ever met. And I take that as a compliment, because the currency of networking is generosity, not greed. And it starts with giving to receive. And no one's going to know you unless you help them first. We talk about in sales that it's about not who you know. It's not a massive Rolodex of cards that's important, but rather it's being known. It's not who you know, but who knows you. And one of the things that I try to stress is, how do you become known by somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do it a couple different ways, but you talked about this idea of, is it first a customer, is it first a friend?
Mm-hmm.
When you help somebody with no expectation of anything in return, people tend to remember that.
Absolutely.
And that's one way to become known, being consistent in who you are and
mm-hmm.
how you carry yourself personally and professionally. Those are other ways that you become known. But when you give, people tend to remember it. And most people want to reciprocate that
mm-hmm.
and help you out. And I think that's the message that we're trying to send.
And yet walking away from a direct expectation of reciprocation, I think, is extremely important and misunderstood by many. And as you go about connecting with people around the Rainmaker training and just helping people to develop a culture of generosity and giving and service, something that's very important to us at North Group as well, is to do so in a way of sincerity
yes.
and generosity. And understanding that, yes, probably if I engage in this type of behavior overall, good things will eventually happen, perhaps for me personally, certainly for my firm.
Mm-hmm.
But looking for that in any direct form of reciprocity is a mistake, because people will know that there's an underlying motivation there that's not completely pure. And
correct.
Speaking for myself, and I know speaking for you, We desire it to be a motivation of helpfulness, a motivation of services, and you so aptly said, approaching it with generosity rather than greed. And I think people figure those things out. They're intuitive about us and where we're really coming from, and eventually those things will be exposed. So there's no real great shortcut to sustainable sales growth is what I hear you say.
That's correct.
That's maybe the bad news for those who might be looking for a return next quarter, but if you're looking for a long-term return in a relational service-oriented business, I think Scott has done a magnificent job of describing how to get started on that.
Thank you, Roger. And too often business owners and business managers aren't patient to wait for that to happen. They expect immediate results, and they want to teach those close techniques. And let's close that deal. Let's close that deal.
Yes.
It's been open for a while. It just doesn't work that way.
I don't even like that term anymore.
I don't either.
I think it's a term that is misused. I mean, certainly there is a point, you've had it, I've had it, where we sit down with a businessman and look across the table and say, how can we best get together on this? And maybe there's a little give and take about what the service plan is or what the fees are going to be or whatever that is. That's a mutual close where we both understand that it's in our best interest to get together and let's do it on a basis that we both feel good about. If that's a close, I'm good with it.
And what I usually say to people that I've become friends with, I look forward to the day that we do business together.
Yep.
And I mean that in all sincerity. If it doesn't happen, our friendship's still there.
Still intact.
Right.
Yep.
And it may take 10 years. You know, it may have been dad's accountant that they're using. I respect that there's a long-term relationship there. I'm not trying to harm that person. But maybe they found that we're a better fit, have a different skill set, bring something more to the table. And somewhere down the road, I look forward to that day that we can do business together. That takes time. It may be 7 years or 10 years. But like I said, I'm a young man and I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to the day that we do business together. And I tell people that.
And in all sincerity, if the reward remains a productive and enjoyable friendship, that's enough reward as well.
And I've had a number of those people tell their friends that they should hire me. For different reasons, they can't hire me right now because it may have been a long-term relationship. They may be in the middle of an estate planning that they're doing, and they're just not able to hire me at the moment. But those people have become some of my best referral sources. They'll tell their colleagues, you should talk to Scott Heintzelman and McKinley & Asbury. They're great. And that really is affirmation of the business model and the approach that I take. It's really rewarding to me.
I was going to say that must be very rewarding. Well, thanks so much. It's been rewarding for me to develop a friendship and a relationship with you over the last couple of years, Scott. Look forward to many more years of drinking at the fountain of the exuberant accountant. And we certainly invite any of our listeners to subscribe to the blog if you'd like to, exuberantaccountant.com. You're certainly welcome to join the growing legion of followers of that. And Scott, it's just been a great pleasure to have you on Straightforward today, and I thank you so much for joining me.
Roger, I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Have a great day, everyone.
North Group Consultants continues to provide direction for your future through sustained relationships. We identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.